Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Book Bites for Kids. This is your host, Suzanne Lawrence, and I hope to be with author Clyde Lindsley today. He has a book called Death of a Mill Girl, which is a part of a mystery series, a Joshua Bead mystery series. And I just had some trouble getting here online. They've changed some things up at Blog Talk Radio, where you now can get on this direct thing with an ear set. And I got on, and I thought he was on the line with me because someone was on. But then I couldn't hear him, so I hung up, and now I've called in again with the regular telephone line, and I don't have anybody here with me. So I sent information to his publicist, who has been getting in touch with me. So hopefully he's going to be here in a few minutes, and we can talk to him about this book, because it's an interesting book. I got a copy a few weeks ago and started reading it, and I just went through it really quickly. It was really interesting. It takes place in New England in 1836, and it's about the murder of a beautiful young girl who's hired to work in the textile mills there. And that was of particular interest to me because the way the mill girls were treated back then reminded me of the way that the young girls were treated in the early 1900s in New York City in the sweatshops, garment factories, you know, where they made the dresses and things, because I wrote two books about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, and so it kind of reminded me of that and the way the girls were all treated. So anyway, you can find the book at Amazon.com. I looked to see if he had a website. His last name is spelled Linsley, and his first name is Clyde, and this book is called Death of a Mill Girl, and it looks like it was originally published in 2002, then reprinted again in 2009, and I'm not sure if it's also come out again, but on the back of the book it says, once again, after many years, here's the first book in the critically acclaimed Josiah Bead series of historical mysteries. So that's one thing I was wanting to find out a little bit too about this series and when it originally came out. I'm not sure what the name of the first book in the series is, and you know why this one has come out several times, and you know, sounds like it's been pretty popular. But if you go to Amazon.com and you just type in Death of a Mill Girl, you can find out information about the book there. There are only a couple of reviews, but you can get kind of a summary of the book and stuff right there. So, gosh, I don't know what's happened here today and why he's not calling in. Like I said, I got in touch with his publicist, told him it was 2:30 Central today. That's another thing we've been having trouble with our guests lately is everyone figuring out the correct time for, you know, the time zone for the show. The show starts at 2:30 on Tuesdays, and that's 2:30 Central time. So our guests have to kind of figure out where that is, you know, what time that is wherever they are, and everybody's not always in the Central time zone. So I've got somebody here now. Maybe this is him. Hi, is this Clyde?
Yes, it is, I believe. I'm not so sure anymore.
Okay, good. We're already on the air. I think you were on maybe online a little bit earlier with me, and you got cut off or something. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I tried a couple times.
Sorry about that. I don't know what the deal is. I got kind of messed up too. But anyway, I was just telling people a little bit about the book. Just kind of waiting for you because I felt like you were going to be here since I saw somebody call in and then get knocked offline because I can see the number here on my little dashboard, so I thought that must be you. So welcome to Book Bites for Kids. We're talking about your book today, Death of a Mill Girl. So before you start telling people a little bit about the book, tell us about your background and how you became a writer, if you would.
You okay? I'm all right, Jay. I'm in kind of a louder place than I expected to be. I'm outside at a small shopping mall, and so I will do my best.
Okay. Did you hear what I asked you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I heard it. I started out in the fourth grade. A teacher asked us all to write short stories, and I wrote one, and it seemed to go over rather well. And I thought, well, gee, that's something I could do, and so I've done it since. I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas, originally, and I went to Little Rock Central High School during the desegregation years, and watched riots going on outside my homeroom window, and saw the reporters around. Now, gee, that's something I could do, and so I sort of went from there. Went to journalism school, and I've written all my life ever since. I don't know how that.
Well, I was looking for a website. I didn't see one for you, but I did see on Amazon.com your author page there with your books on it, and it looks like mysteries are kind of a favorite of yours.
Yeah. That's what I started out writing, and once I got out of the fact and the journalism phase, I started writing mysteries, and I enjoy them. They tell stories, and they have a beginning and an end, and generally people who read seem to like to see stories who come to a beginning and an end. So that's fine.
And I think a lot of people love mysteries. I love mysteries. Now, this book that we're going to be talking about today is called Death of a Mill Girl, and it's actually part of a series. Now, is it the second book in the series?
It's actually the first in the series. I had one book prior to that, but it was a contemporary private eye book. And I wanted to do this because I was living in New England at the time and not too far from Old Servage Village, which is kind of a recreation of a New England rural village, farming village. And I kind of liked the feel of that, so I wanted to try to capture that to the extent I could. And so that's why I started where I did. The 1830s were right about the time that the Industrial Revolution was catching on in America, and it caught on in New England primarily because it wasn't quite as nice a place for farming as it was for making things at factories. So that's how I picked it up. And the first of the entrepreneurs who decided to do that kind of work in New England hired farm girls primarily because they were available for work. They weren't receiving an income at that point, and this gave them a chance to get one. And they also had opportunities to do education and that kind of thing along with it. And so a lot of farm girls came to the big industrial centers, such as they were, and settled in there. They were put in boarding houses, essentially. They were charged for their room and board, and that was deducted from their pay. They were generally also charged a tithe at the local church, even if it wasn't their church. but they collected that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think most... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering how you came up with them when you decided to base your story on that time frame and that area of the country and the industrial revolutions, like you said, starting, and the textile mills taking hold. Then how did you come up with the idea of this Josiah Bede? Because he's a retired lawyer and military hero, so where did he come from in your mind?
Well, we lived in Hartford, Connecticut at the time. I was working for a newspaper there. And the Old Sturbridge Village was just down the road a bit from us. And they were just in the beginning of an attempt to set up a kind of small manufacturing village there. And so I watched that in the process and thought, well, that's an interesting place to start, and it gives lots of opportunities for things to happen. I hadn't initially thought in terms of a mystery, but once I got thinking about it, it seemed to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's as good a place to murder somebody as anything else, anywhere else.
Oh, wow. I guess that's one way to look at it. Well, I enjoyed the book. I was a little intrigued by the fact that on the back of the book it says, once again, after many years, here's the first book in the critically acclaimed. You should have realized that. So you actually released the book first in 2002?
The book originally came out in 2002, yeah. It was as a three-book series published by Berkeley. And part of one of their mystery series called Prime Time. And it didn't really sell the way I wished it had. And as a member of the Authors Guild, which I joined pretty quickly, I was given the opportunity to get the book back into print. So this is the second time around for it, and there are two more that will probably follow if I can get them ready to go. Just getting a better response so far than it did the first time around, which I'm hopeful for.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more things authors can do now to help promote their books, I think, online than there were in 2002, even though that wasn't that long ago. But, you know, there are just many more things you can do, so that's wonderful. Well, tell listeners today what the story, I mean, it's pretty evident, Death of a Mill Girl, but tell us the story, just kind of a little summary about what is it about, what happened?
Well, it's my principal character is... guy named Josiah Bede, which nice old New England name. He's a lawyer and a kind of gentleman farmer in New Hampshire, who had retired to New England after working in Andrew Jackson's presidential administration. And he continues to practice law because that's kind of the way you'd make a living in those days. You do 10 different things. And coming back from a week in the court, he discovers a body on his property, one of his fallow fields, and it's a young teenager, that girl by about 17, who had actually been in the mills in kind of what is now called Manchester, New Hampshire. And because it was on his property and he had had some experience doing this kind of thing earlier in his life, he was asked to investigate further, and he did. and it required going down to the mills and exploring the various relationships going on down there. And it worked out nicely, I thought.
I enjoyed all the details and things you had in the book, you know, about the little towns and about the mill and just all kinds of details you had in there. So how did you research all this stuff?
I did a lot of reading, and I did a lot of talking to people, which is something that newspaper reporters pick up. There were a couple of things that came to my mind right off. One was that farm girls worked pretty hard on the farm, but they didn't have regular hours. And working in a textile mill, you had regular hours. They were quite long hours. And you were expected basically from sunrise until sunset, and sometimes well after that. So it was a job that many had not really been prepared for. And so some of the labor unrest that later developed, I think, resulted from that. It was a hard life because they were working at a fairly monotonous job, and they were working almost nonstop from, during the daylight hours. Mm-hmm. And the managers kept increasing their quotas, and some of the first labor actions in America occurred among those girls in the textile mills in New England. It was just kind of a shock for them, and I think it came a shock to the people who follow them.
Mm-hmm. You know, another thing I noticed too about the book that you would have had to do some research on in some regard, and I kind of wondered about it too, and that is, you know, if you're writing a book that takes place in 1836 in New England, obviously people back then and in that part of the country talked differently than they would today and spoke differently than they would in other parts of the country, you know, as well. So how did you research that to really get the way they would sound and what they would say? Because I thought that was a nice part of the book. It just, you know, it had that sound to it of people speaking back then, as I would imagine them, you know.
Well, thank you, Suzanne. I'm glad to hear that. But I have to admit that there's no great secret to it. I wrote, somebody asked me that once before, actually. How do you get that feel? And I had to say, all of us who write historical books basically are writing modern English. We just take it.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of things that were common back then. There were slang words which we use automatically today that had not yet been invented, because the concepts that they referred to hadn't been invented yet. So if you eliminate those and find other ways to talk about the same things, it's going to sound older than it actually is. So that's what happened, basically. I tried to get the people right and hope that everything else would follow. But I may have to move inside here because it's starting to rain.
Oh, goodness.
Well,
it's not cooperating with you today, huh? Well, tell us a little bit about the writing process for this book. How long did it take you to put all this together? And during the process, did you write on it every day, or how did that go?
Yeah, just about. I did write pretty much every day. Yeah, I don't get more than, generally more than 3 or 4 hours in the, in a set, because after that I'm kind of burned out. But
right.
That happens. But if you don't write every day,
that's great. I think I'm a writer too. So writing 3 or 4 hours at one sitting is really great. If you can manage that, I think that's wonderful. You can get a lot of work done during that amount of time. You know,
you can, or you can get an incredibly little work done in that same period of time. And it can. It varies from day to day, and from problem to problem, depending on the plot difficulties, that kind of thing.
So writing basically 3 or 4 hours at a shot most every day. How long did it take? How many months to go from the initial idea to the finished manuscript?
Let me think here. It took about 6 months, I guess, for the first one. The second one was harder because I had a contract by that time, and couldn't. I had to make it, you know.
Right.
So it's always. Yeah. I think it was Mark Twain who said that work is what a body is obliged to do, and play is what a body is not obliged to do. And the corollary to that is, once you're obliged to do it, it becomes work, and it gets a lot harder.
Right. So then what was the most difficult part of writing this book, or what's the most difficult part for you of writing in general, either one?
Getting started, generally, is the hardest part. I sit down at the keyboard and I try to think of things to do that don't involve it, you know, playing solitaire or checking my email or, you know, avoiding work as long as I possibly can. And then sooner or later, I had to do it. So I do.
That sounds so familiar. I think it's that way with every writer, and I'm always surprised, you know, because generally, we like to write, you know, but it's so hard getting started that you just avoid it, it seems like, forever until finally you can get it going. And then that happens every time you sit down sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I think one of the things that happens is once you've done it a few times, it's not as much fun as to write as it is to have written, you know, once you've completed something. I have a tendency to kind of hug it to my chest and sort of force it on people, and I don't want to get started on the next one, so that's
Well, or just I like it when I'm doing the next one, if I can get into it enough that it's starting to flow, or get in a section that's starting to flow, then the writing's fun. But then, you know, maybe you're just working on a chapter and all things are go and it's going well. Then you get to the next chapter and there you are again, stuck, kind of got to start from go.
Yep.
What do I do here? And then you just eke through it and then you get it going again and then you enjoy the process. I think that's the thing that keeps people going, or they wouldn't write the books, because it is hard to write, and it is fun to have written something, but sometimes that wouldn't be worth the effort, I don't think, if you didn't also like to write once you got it going, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to do that. Yeah. So what do you like most, then, about being a published author?
Having done it, it certainly isn't the pay, but I made more money working in a fairly low-paying occupation in journalism, but this is a lot more pleasure, at least once it's done, and generally knowing that I'm producing something that somebody somewhere will read makes a big difference, too.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you've written how many books?
hang on a second, let me think. Five.
Okay.
The fifth one just came out.
Five. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking on page at five.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I keep losing what you were saying. So
in addition to writing books, do you also do author visits? Do you go to schools or do you speak at conferences, any kind of thing like that?
Yeah, when I can and when I can when I can get the invitations. I enjoy that. It's interesting to me. I've done a number of schools where teachers will have me in and want to talk about improving the vocabulary and picking up, using bigger words. And my entire career has been spent trying to find simpler words instead of bigger ones.
Right.
So, I have to do some readjustment there, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I'm always surprised at that with the teachers, too, because I just want to find the clearest word that conveys what I'm trying to get across. Well, is there anywhere besides Amazon.com online where people can find out about you and your books, or is that the best place for people to go if they want to find out more?
Well, until I get my website out, I guess it's about as good as it's going to be.
Okay.
I do have all my books are in a bookstore called Mystery Love Company, which is over in Oxford, Maryland, and they have them all and can.
It's called Mystery Love Company. That's a cute name for a bookstore.
It used to be in Baltimore, but it's now in Oxford, which is up on the eastern shore of Chesapeake Bay, and I'm having to hide from the rain here.
Okay. We've only got a couple more minutes, so let me ask a couple more questions here to finish up this interview. One was, many people who listen to this show are writers as well. They love reading other people's books, so that's why they listen to this show, to come on to find other books to read. But they also like getting marketing tips and things from other authors. So do you have any marketing tips for authors who have written a book and are trying to sell it?
Marketing is the hardest part, I think. Writing's no prize, but it's a whole lot easier than finding markets and developing markets. I do writers' conferences, reader conferences. There's one in the Washington area called the Malice Domestic, which I try to get to every year because it's right at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I served on the board one year, so I can sometimes get myself onto a panel there, and that always helps, I think, to gives you some exposure that you wouldn't get otherwise. Mystery readers are very loyal people. They come out to this conference by the hundreds, and they come with shopping carts, and they fill them up with new books and take them around to get people to sign them.
Yeah, we are running out of time. It's been really fun talking with you today. I want to remind listeners that the book we've been talking about today is called Death of a Mill Girl. It's actually the second book, the first book in this Josiah Bede mystery by Clyde Lindsley. And you can find out more about Clyde and his books if you just go to Amazon.com. You can either just type in his name there in the search engine, Clyde, C-L-Y-D-E. His last name is spelled L-I-N-S-L-E-Y. Or you can type in Death of a Mill Girl to find out about the book we've been talking about today. So we're all out of time, but I've really enjoyed chatting with you today, Clyde. And best of luck with this book and all the others you're writing, okay?
Well, thank you, Suzanne. I might add, if you could, if you go to Wildside Press, which is my most recent publisher, they do have a little bit of a bio there as well.
Wildsidepress.com?
Wildside, yes, W-I-L-D-S-I-D-E, one word.
Okay, great. Well, we'll do that. All right.
Oh, yeah.
All right, thanks so much. Take care. Have a great day. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Rick.